So we are also very honored to have Professor Ali Nayeri give a talk. He's a professor at Chatham University, also a member of the Institute for Quantum Studies. He's talking about instabilities of black space. There's many of the areas of research I'm not going to go over too much, but perhaps one that got a huge amount of attention recently was a famous paper he wrote with some colleagues on a string alternative to cosmic inflation.
Yep.
And
so that was with Kamran Maha and Robert Brandenburger, who's going to be here next week, I guess.
Very, very shortly. And also something people probably don't know, Ali was the last collaborator of
Fred Hoyle.
Fred Hoyle. So you shouldn't be the last collaborator, Ali. Just
Well, thank you so much for the invitation, Jeff. I should thank all the PI people, members of PI, and also Lucian, who's not here.
You should put on your microphone.
I should put on my microphone.
Oh, let's start over again.
I guess it is. I hope it's working now. I guess it is. Okay. I wanted to talk about something which is kind of introduction to my talk perhaps next week, next Thursday. So I promised to talk about instability of flat space under quantum conformal fluctuations with bound Hamiltonian today, and the next one would be on for the unbounded Hamiltonian. But before that, let me just give you a quick review of what I mean by quantum conformal fluctuations and some nice features of that, which is kind of alternative to formal quantum gravity that people do. So it's in the semi-classical approach. So in the semi-classical approach, you have this nice gentleman here, G mu nu, which is let me put it this way. So the feature of this is here you have geometry, and here I would say you have physics. But this is energy, momentum, tensor, so mass, energy, momentum, everything is there, but I would say the whole physics is there. So in the classical approach to quantum gravity, here you treat, again, your geometry to be completely classical. So what you do is to look at this feature. So you quantize the right-hand side of Einstein equations. Einstein theory is a tensor theory. It has 2 degrees of freedom. What I'm going to consider here would be is you can look at quantization of one of the degrees of freedom, which would be the conformal part of the action or the gravity. Okay, so for instance, if you look at the metric for the universe, the classical metric would be something like that. Now, what I'm trying to say here is, by the way, this work is inspired by a number of people, Braut, Gross, Narlikar and Padmanabhan. So in this case, I'm assuming that any departure from conformal degrees of freedom can be quantized in the form of this quantity. So if phi is 0, then you go back to your classical metric, any departure from 1 would mean that we are in the realm of quantum. So that's what I'm going to do for the rest of this talk. Now,
what do you mean with flat space? With curved space?
It's conformal to flat. It's conformal to flat. So that's the reason I said. But you will see in a moment that this really doesn't matter. I'm going to do it for more general case. So I'm going to assume that I can write the metric in general. I'm going to write the metric so this is the flat metric. And what appears here is my conformal factor. Now I'm going to look at the scalar field on this background. So I'm going to write the action in combination with the scalar field. Okay? So C is my scalar field. Then, to complete the action, and then I couple it conformally to gravity, and I'm assuming the scalar field has mass m. Now, what I'm going to do is just do the conformal transformation on this whole metric. Namely, I'm going to assume this action, sorry. I'm going to assume that g mu nu goes to omega squared g mu nu, and c goes to omega inverse c. Under this transformation, I'm going to also assume a very important thing. In order not to confuse little c with big C, I'm going to say 1 is equal to little c, speed of light. Okay, so after this, doing this transformation, my action will look like something which is as if you are in the back, flat background. By the way, for those of you who may not be familiar with my notation, c comma mu is just dc dx mu, and mu is 0, 1, 2, 3, space-time. Okay, so now I owe you an explanation for what phi and psi and alpha g are. Okay, psi is coming from the metric, which shows the conformal degrees of freedom. So psi would be m over alpha g times omega. And then alpha g is four pi m squared over 3, and then of course phi is omega c. So now I have this action. If I look at my Euler
Lagrange equations,
I would have two coupled equations. One for phi, my scalar field, and the other one would be for the conformal factor. Okay. And by this again, I mean the expectation value of phi squared for the vacuum. So I know my background is flat. So if I am in flat space, namely omega is exactly equal to 1, then I should get back to the vacuum solution. And you can see from, so I need these two equations. This is my equation 1 and 2. So if you look at equation 2, when omega is constant, namely you are in flat space, you are not in a conformally flat, but you are in flat space, then psi would be constant, as you can see, the solution to this is the vacuum solution, okay? So psi equal to m over alpha g means phi squared equals 0, and I'm back in the vacuum. Okay. Now I want to perturb my equations. So I'm in a vacuum. I want to perturb it from the vacuum. So psi was constant. Now I want to perturb my degrees of freedom. And I'm going to turn on the switch. And now there would be departure from flat space. So in order to do that, I'm going to consider the following perturbation. So I'm going to assume that psi of t is m over alpha g plus epsilon of t. And this would be for any t larger than 0. Epsilon of t for any values, for any t smaller than or equal 0 is 0. And we're going to go back to the vacuum solution. Okay? Now, for the moment, I'm going to assume, for simplicity, just a warm up, I'm going to assume that phi is just phi of t, so namely a homogeneous background, a homogeneous field, sorry. So phi is only function of time, then this theoretic problem would reduce to a simple quantum mechanics problem. Okay, so now I can write phi of t. But first of all, let's look at equation 1. So equation 1, since phi is only function of time, then I would get d squared phi. I mean, the box has this. So I'm going to, what I just did, I'm going to substitute for psi from there. So I have psi squared times phi. So this would be psi squared. Uh, plus terms which are higher orders in epsilon. So I'm going to ignore, I'm linearizing my equations. I'm going to keep only linear orders in epsilon. So that's what I'm getting here. Now I can, using the Heisenberg picture to solve this equation, I'm going to find by the Green's function, or as you can see, this is like forced harmonic motion. So phi of t would be 1 over square root of 2m times a e to the I m t plus a dagger e to the minus I m t. This is for t equal or smaller than 0, and there is another solution if t is positive. So this is for t being positive. A dagger, they have the usual meanings here. Now I want to check again for the consistency. I know that my background solution is a vacuum solution. So after a little bit of algebra, if I look at, so I'm going to use that solution. I look at psi here to look at this solution here, and then want to find phi squared. We know normally this two-point correlation function is divergent, but I'm supposed that you can renormalize it. But here what is, after playing with this, what you get after renormalization would be something simple. This would be M alpha G, alpha sub G, which is like the coupling constant, and integral dt prime epsilon dot t prime of t prime cosine of 2m t minus t prime, in which dot has its usual meaning again. Okay, so now I want to plug this back into equation 2 and see how psi behaves. Remember, psi was the conformal fluctuations. I want to see whether this grows in time, and if it grows in time, whether it makes any instability to my background space. Okay, so in order to do that, I'm going to just substitute phi squared over there. And again, to the first order in epsilon of t, equation 2 would look like something like this. So I would have the second derivative of epsilon with respect to t is equal to m squared alpha g squared, an integral from 0 to t dt prime epsilon dot of t prime cosine of 2m t minus t prime. And I'm going to do the following. I can write this as m squared alpha g squared 0 t prime dt prime epsilon dot of t prime minus 1 over 2m d dt sine
of 2m t minus t prime. This should be dd2 prime. Okay, so now I can use integration by parts. The reason I'm going to do that is because I want to find the solution to my epsilon of t. This is a differential integral equation, so I have to write it in advance so I can understand how to solve it. So by doing integration by parts on that, I am left with this equation. Okay, so this equation begs for a Laplace transformation. So if you used Laplace transform here, I would be able to find epsilon dot of S. So I'm using Laplace transform here. On the left-hand side, I get E double dot of S is going to be 1 half M alpha G squared E dot of 0 L of S, which I'm going to introduce you to you in a moment, plus 1 half M alpha G squared E double dot of S L of S. So what LS is? LS is a Laplace transform of the sine. It will be 0 to infinity dt e to the minus e to the st. Sine of 2mt. This can easily be integrated, in this case at least, which is 2m over s squared plus 4m squared. Okay, so my goal was to find epsilon double dot. Now, easily I can find this algebraically. So epsilon double dot of S is 1 half m alpha g squared L of S divided by 1 minus 1 half m alpha g squared L of S. Okay. Now there are many ways to look at the solution, but one way to look at this is to see whether there are, if I find that there are real poles for this solution, then that means the solution is unstable. So as you can see, at least in this case, it is extremely easy to find that solution. So the claim is that if using the Laplace theorem, epsilon double dot of t can be determined from the poles, and of epsilon double dot of S.
What one question. Did you set epsilon dot of 0 to 1 for this last box expression?
No, I just forgot to write it down.
Okay.
Right, thank you. No, the only condition is epsilon of 0 is 0. But we don't know about epsilon dot of 0, right? Okay, thanks. So the claim is fluctuations increase without bounds, actually. If epsilon double dot of S has real poles, again, you can see how the behavior of L of S is with respect to S. If you increase S, L would increase. So L of S increases as S increases. But then you have a maximum value for L, and that would be L of 0. Which is 1 over 2m. Okay? So in order to have real poles, one minus 1/2 m alpha g squared, L max should be larger than one. So if I just substitute here, I solve for the mass, so 1/4 alpha g squared would be larger than 1, or if I substitute for alpha g from there, is m squared would be larger than or equal to 3 pi h bar c, so now I'm again putting back h bar and c here. And as you know, this is my Planck mass. So obviously the mass, Planck mass squared. So obviously the mass you see is larger than the Planck mass. So what does that mean? If the conformal fluctuations originate, they can produce super heavy bosons. If they can be produced, they can be, if they can be originated, you can produce super heavy bosons. And this, in my mind, could have many astrophysical applications as well. Maybe the things that we see for the gamma ray bursters or FRBs could be explained by the instability of the flat space time. Okay. Now let's do the general case. So now I want to consider the general case. So previously I assumed that scalar field is just homogeneous, not function of time, just function of time, not function of space. Now I'm going to assume that phi also is function of space and time. So if phi is phi of x and t, if I look at the solution box of phi, this time. Solution to equation one would be box of phi plus alpha g squared, again using the same psi as defined before. I get m squared over alpha g squared plus 2m over alpha g, epsilon of t times phi is equal to 0. So this time I'm going to use a Fourier decomposition for phi. So phi x and t can be written as 1 over 2 pi cubed d3k q sub k e to the I k dot x, in which q sub k, q double dot sub k plus omega squared, omega k squared times q of q sub k is equal to minus 2m alpha g e of t q k of t. Okay. This, of course, as you know, omega k squared is k squared plus m squared. Again, remember, for negative time, we were in vacuum. And I have to look at this, as you know, this time this phi squared is really divergent. The divergent part of this could play a role, I don't know. But I'm throwing it away like most of the people in the field. But after looking what is left, which is well-behaved part, so you can see why this is divergent. So instead of 2m that we had before, now we have cosine of 2q sub k. 2 omega sub k times t minus t prime. So that that is divergent, actually, because you have to sum over all the omega sub k's. But ignoring that part, again, I'm inserting this to equation two here, and what I find would be the following. So it would be good to, okay, later on I will, how can I compare? I want you to compare, okay, maybe I should write it here. Okay, so what is the solution would be epsilon double dot of t is equal to m squared alpha g squared over 8 pi squared epsilon dot of 0 and k of s. F of t plus m squared alpha g squared over 8 pi squared integral 0 to t dt prime epsilon dot of t prime f t minus t prime. Here, f of t is equal to 0 to infinity k squared dk omega sub k to the 4 sine of 2 omega kt. Okay, so again, as before, to find the solution, whether this epsilon double dot of t grows with time or not, I'm going to do the another time, like the case for the homogeneous one. I'm going to look at the Laplace transform of the above equation, and what I get would be epsilon double dot of s is equal to m squared alpha g squared over 8 pi squared epsilon of 0. Times k of s divided by 1 minus m squared alpha g squared over 8 pi squared k of s. So k of s is the Laplace transform of the following. Okay. This can be evaluated, actually, and it will be at least the first integral. So it would be 0 to infinity k squared dk omega k to the 4, 1 over s squared plus 4 omega k squared. Very similar to what we had before in a simple quantum mechanical problem. Okay, again, as before, in order to see whether epsilon of t grows without bound, I have to see whether my k of s, epsilon of s has any real poles. Again, as you can see, k of s increases as s, k of s decreases as s increases. So in this case, I can find k max of 0, k max, which would be equal to k max of 0. And if you conduct that integral, so it would be integral of k squared dk over k squared plus m squared to the power of 1/2 5. And that has a very simple solution. So k max would be equal to 1/6 m squared Okay. Again, as before, if I'm looking for real poles, 1 minus m squared alpha g squared over 8 pi squared times k of 0, this should be larger than larger than 1. Therefore, if I substitute for k max, which is k of 0, so what I found would be alpha g squared over 48 pi squared should be larger than 1, and m squared should be larger than this time 36 pi, the Planck max squared. So as you can see, the order of magnitude between a homogeneous case and the general case is not that much different. So what it says is whether you are dealing with a homogeneous scalar field, which is conformally interacted with gravity, or inhomogeneous case, if there are any conformal fluctuations, they would produce superheavy bosons. Superheavy bosons. So what does that mean? You are starting from flat space, and there would be a non-trivial transition, phase transition, to a non-trivial geometry after that. So it would be very interesting to find out whether there would be any stationary quantum conformal state in which, after this phase transition, the universe can end up. So this is something that I wanted to discuss with, actually, as I mentioned to you, this would be the prelude, because here I assumed, when I wrote the action, I considered the positive sign for the kinetic energy term. If I flip the sign, things would be even crazier than what you see here, which hopefully I'm going to discuss it next week. But for the moment, what I wanted to kind of conclude here is gravity as a tensor theory has 2 degrees of freedom. I can quantize 1 degree of freedom, which is in the conformal factor. If I look whether the quantization will grow or not, I see that there is a threshold for the mass of the bosons. So if the mass would be less than this limit, or the limit I found in the previous case, there wouldn't be any conformal quantum fluctuations, which leads to a non-trivial geometry. It is interesting, since this is kind of, I have this epsilon of t, it would be interesting to see if I know my final state. For instance, if I know that my initial state, my pre-selection state, and if I know that my post-selection state in the context of what Yaqiri is defining, I guess this is maybe a first attempt to do something with the Wick measurement in a curved space-time, with gravity at least, because I have something which is, you know, really kind of weakly in track with the scalar field. That's all. If there is any question, I would be more than happy to answer. If not, I guess I finished 10 minutes earlier.
Thank you, speaker. Does anyone have any questions?
So this, you said you use Laplace transform to go from an integral equation to get a solution, right?
Yeah.
But I don't understand why there's a derivative with respect to epsilon double dot of s. Is it supposed to be just no derivative there?
Remember, Yeah, but this was the integral form, so
no,
I get.
No. So
yeah.
You solve, okay, maybe. So you solve for E double dot, epsilon double dot, right?
The epsilon double dot of S.
Right, that, I understand. So for plus transform. Then you go over there and you say the condition for the stability, for the instability, is if the denominator is greater or equal than 1. I don't get this. Why?
No, in order epsilon, okay, in order epsilon of t, okay, in order epsilon of t to grow without bound, you need the epsilon of s needs to have a real pulse.
Okay.
So, oh, this is 0, not 1.
Oh, it's 0 there.
Yeah. So you don't want your denominator to blow up, so that's all.
But inequality doesn't work.
No, after you do, if you do the inverse Laplace transform.
It has to be greater or equal than 0, then alpha g squared should be less equal than 1, not greater. What am I missing?
Let me see.
Is this just an issue of coming at the pole from both sides?
From both sides, yes. Yeah, the pole's coming from both sides. Yeah.
Well, still, inequality should be either opposite or.
No, for the real part. Let me see whether that's the minus sign I got there.
It was the same issue with the.
It's a pretty, no, no, I know.
Case. I didn't want to say anything because I thought maybe
not. No, no, the only, okay, the condition, sorry, the condition is this should be larger than 1, that's all. So you don't want to have a negative thing under this. If this becomes negative, this.
You will have a negative, that's what you're saying.
Well, yeah, yeah, it's other way around. You want this to be negative.
And why do you say k of 0, not k of s?
Because happens, I'm looking at k of max. K of max happens at s of 0.
And what's the significance that you get a factor of 12 between 2?
I guess that says nothing. Actually, it says the same order of magnitude. So, but it is, what is important is that it's much heavier than the Planck mass, that's all. Whether it's, you know, 3 or 36 pi.
Well, you take a square root for the mass.
Sure, but it's still heavy, it's heavier than Planck mass.
Factor of 10 or 20 something.
Yeah, but it's the same order of magnitude, that's what I'm trying to say. Whether it's homogeneous or inhomogeneous.
But this is the perturbation for, this is the time evolution of small perturbations.
A small perturbation.
So now the question would be, of course.
But this small perturbation grow without bounds.
If
satisfy this condition.
When we look at the stability of small perturbations, we say, let's look if your smallness of perturbation condition is violated. You need to input next terms. Is that the case here or not? You need to input epsilon squared.
Well, yes.
Because maybe quadratic term will rescue the runoff.
No, actually, I checked that. It doesn't save it. Right. It doesn't save it. So, no, the only condition would be the mass of the scalar field. So this would be the threshold of the mass. Otherwise, you wouldn't get any instability. Okay? So now, if I change the sign of the kinetic energy, it violates the non-energy condition. So, but at the same time, it buys you know things for us that I'm going to talk about it next week, hopefully.
So epsilon is the smallness in psi, not
in psi, which is
the scale factor.
No, which is the conformal factor.
I mean, the conformal factor, right? Yeah. So you have a situation when with time, the conformal factor blows up, right?
Yeah.
So what's the physical picture of that?
You can create a baby universe out of it here. So there would be another universe with a non-trivial geometry. As I told you, it would be interesting to see if, you know, as a post-selection, you know the quantum state of the geometry that you're going to end up, maybe you can find, you can impose conditions on what type of perturbation you should have in the system. But this would be transition, a phase transition to non-trivial geometries.
So C works in tandem with psi, with omega, because phi doesn't diverge, or does it? So you have omega blows up, right? But what happens with C? Does it go to infinity as well?
No, no.
But it better go to zero if you want to keep phi, does it?
Well, it goes to zero because this is omega inverse.
C. Oh, there's omega.
Yeah.
Any other questions?
What about conformal anomaly and other corrections to the vacuum excitation?
I haven't studied those, but it would be very interesting. Or as my colleague Justin also said, here I'm going to have assumed just a step function in time, but it would be interesting to see what type of, if you have a perturbation space as well, just space and time. So that would be another generalization of the situation. But you are right, that would be interesting to investigate as well.
So it's time for more questions. There are any. If not, let's thank our speakers.
Thank you.